Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
G-A-L-D-E-M. This song is good.
Welcome to Growing Up with Gal-Dem, the show where we explore the stories, struggles and triumphs of growing up as people of colour. I'm Natty Kasambala.
And I'm Nayella Arboyne. Each week, our guests respond to old diary entries, letters, notes or texts from their younger selves,
helping us understand how their coming of age made them who they are today. Nay, I'm stressed.
What's happened?
What's happened? Why are you stressed, Natty?
Why are you stressed?
I'm stressed because I've got one of those Google trackers on my flights home to see my parents for Christmas. And
where's home?
It's just, my parents live in South Africa and hopefully we'll be going to Malawi as well. Yeah, and it's kind of that weird thing of like, it's going home, but I did live there for a year during lockdown, but it's not really my home. But it is my home because my parents are there and the house is my home. But it's just bad news after bad news. Every week I get an email notification and the price is just going up and up and up with more layovers, more time to go to waste, you know?
Layovers are like my like third circle of hell.
Oh my God. There's one route that's saying three stopovers. I'm like,
stop it. Just, behave. I'll just walk.
Like, literally, it would be quicker to walk. Are you going anywhere?
Yeah, I'm going to go to Jamaica to see my grandma.
Oh my God, I'm so jealous.
So I'm really excited about that. I haven't seen her since 2019. But yeah, the same thing. It's like, it doesn't feel like a holiday because she just like lives in a like really rural area in Jamaica. But then me and my brothers are going to do up tourist for the last week. So
oh my God, I'm
ready to escape.
So to fight that SAD.
You know what I mean?
Love that. And speaking of ways to fight the SAD, we're going to get into our next guest. Our guest today won a Lizzie the Second award for design.
Okay. Their father is Nigerian and their mother is Indian.
So they started out designing menswear.
And lastly, the musical direction for their stunning 2021 visual lookbook was By Control, who featured on season 2 of Growing Up with Gal-Dem back in August 2020.
It is the incredible fashion designer and multi-hyphenate creative, Priya Aluwalia. Thank you so much for joining us, Priya. I'm a stan, a fangirl, if you will, of your designs. How are you doing today?
Thank you so much. I'm really good. It's lovely to be chatting with both of you. So how are you guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, not bad. Okay. Enjoying the blue skies, enjoying like autumn weather. Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it?
How would you define what you do and how you show up in the world?
Good question. I guess I would say I'm a creative director and film director. I've got a brand called Alawalia that's really informed by my dual Indian Nigerian heritage and commitment to make fashion in a more positive way for people and the planet. And through that design background and starting my brand and, you know, directing lots of different projects and campaigns, I've also then now sort of gone into the film world, and I've recently been signed with Ridley Scott Film Company. So straddle both film and fashion, and I really enjoy it.
I was going to just ask, for those who, I guess, aren't familiar with your work, and we can answer for both film and fashion, how would you kind of describe the aesthetics, and are there any ways in which they are really overlap between the two?
Yeah, I guess my work in both areas is definitely informed by my background. So I was born in London, but my mum's Indian and my dad's Nigerian and my stepdad is Jamaican. So I've been able to like engage with so much different culture, but it's always culture I don't see reflected back in like popular culture. I mean, it is starting to now, but or what we even learn in school. So with every project at the brand, it's always about learning or discovering more about my background. So, you know, that means that the work is often informed by, it could be architecture in Lagos, or it could be print design in India, and then it always has that London sensibility to it. So I guess that the work in terms of the clothing is definitely fun. I really like colourful like clothes and clothing. So it's always about pushing both guys and, well, everyone to sort of have a bit more fun with their wardrobe. So yeah, lots of prints and embellishment and embroidery. We do really like nice graphic denim styles. So it's definitely bold, I'd say.
I kind of wanted to know a bit more about your journey into fashion. Did you kind of start with menswear, or can you kind of talk us through your process and your journey?
Yeah, I always knew I wanted to be a fashion designer since I was like a kid. So I really did target all my education and all of the work experience I did towards having a fashion design career. And I guess when you're at unis, they often encourage you to choose one pathway because it's difficult to do both. So I chose men's, and I can't really tell. I think with menswear, I chose it in the beginning because there's so much left to explore with menswear, right? So men have practically been wearing the same thing for 50 years. And it's like there's so many boundaries that are there to be pushed and experiment with. So I'd started the brand with menswear, but it was always my intention to do women's as well. Just like when you're starting off as a one-man band, there's only so much you can do. So I started with menswear and pretty quickly got quite a lot of people and stores and customers asking, you know, when is there going to be official women's wear? Because I do believe that everyone can wear whatever they want. Doesn't matter what the label on the garment says. So yeah, then we introduced it, and I'm really, really enjoying it.
Yeah, that the brown knitted dress is one of my favourite like pieces this year that I see everywhere. And I think it's so great. I think we were talking about this before, like even... Yeah, just where gender kind of plays into fashion and how versatile it can be. And I think some of the strongest designers that I love are those ones that kind of flow between both and bring elements of masculinity into feminine clothing and vice versa. But with that said, would you say there are any kind of differences or distinctions in the practice when you were kind of focused solely on menswear versus kind of expanding your offering later on?
When I was doing menswear only, you know, it was like a lot of outward discovery, chatting to people that I know, friends, relatives, looking at popular culture, like looking at musicians, sportsmen, all that different types of stuff as a part of that research process. And now, of course, I still do all of that. And I generally collect a lot of research from galleries and books and things. But with the women's, it's a lot of it is just like, it sounds really... I don't know if it sounds self-obsessed, it's just factual, but a lot of it is just about thinking about my own life and like what I would like out of my wardrobe, you know? So what do I want to wear to a date or a business meeting or to the club or that kind of thing? So you kind of start to work through your own wardrobe and your friends and stuff. So I think it's become a little bit more...
A bit more like intimate.
Yeah, it's sort of like, yeah. I'm looking at myself a little bit more within the process. Yeah, it's definitely more intimate.
Does that make it easier, I guess, to design or...
It changes from season to season, I think. It also changes about like changes depending on where I'm at with myself and how I feel. You know, I also don't want, if I'm having a day where I'm feeling particularly like self-conscious, I don't want to design something that's got my sort of like self-consciousness within it, you know? So it depends. If I'm feeling quite happy and confident, it's easier. I think with women's, there's definitely more you can push in terms of experimentation. So that element makes it easier. I don't know if easy is the right word, but simpler. But yeah, it's funny. Some seasons I design them, I lean towards designing into men's first and then the women's comes afterwards. And other seasons it's a different way around. I think it's kind of, it can move basically.
And I guess looking back, who were some of your early fashion icons?
Yeah, I mean, outside of designers, I always like I always loved looking at MTV based. I watched MTV based music videos all the time. And I just remember absolutely loving like what people like Missy Elliott, Lauryn Hill, Lil Kim wore in women's, and then in men's, like Puff Daddy, as he was known at the time, now Diddy. Like very, very iconic and unapologetic styles of dress. And I found that really inspiring. And I also loved a lot of Bollywood cinema. So I was constantly looking at what like Bollywood stars were wearing. And then within fashion, I bought every magazine I could ever get my hands on. And I was always trying to read them from front to back and memorize every brand and every name. And I loved the artistry of it, but I didn't necessarily see a brand where I saw that I could be a part of the industry because of it. So I loved like the artistry, and you know, Prada has always been incredible. I feel like Miuccia can't do anything wrong. And so I've always been such a fan of that brand, and you know, I can think of all the different shows I've loved. And all that inspiration comes from more of a, I guess, like a technicality thing, or a, looking at styling, or you know, what can be done with your brand. But I don't necessarily think that there was, it wasn't a straight design. Some designers have someone that they really looked up to their whole life, and it was pivotal to the way that they design. I think with me, it's a little bit more nuanced than that. I love the shows and respect all the designers that come before me so highly. But I think that was then also mixed with my personal interests and likes and discovery of what's outside of our education system in the UK. So yeah, I think there's like a mix of things.
Yeah, I totally hear that in terms of like, even if you can see yourself as a fan of fashion, it might feel like those ones are like one step too far removed from what you might see yourself creating. And I guess something that links into that, and also something you said earlier about kind of creating fashion or a brand that uses fashion in for goodness. I'm also interested to hear if there are any particular ways that you want to change or expand the industry with your brand, and that you can see as areas of growth within the fashion industry.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a few areas. I think like, first of all, it's my brand and other brands that are coming up or have been coming up in this sort of generation, I'd say, showing that blackness and brownness is not one dimensional. We have different experiences of it, and we should be able to celebrate that through a non-white gaze. And I think that's something that's really important to me. And the feedback that I get from it is people can see themselves reflected back, but these people are from the whole diaspora. It's really multi-dimensional. And I think that us putting those stories and that creativity on a pedestal is really important. Also to get people feeling like they can be a part of creative industries, right? You know, especially if we're in the UK, in the US, thinking about being like second, third, fourth gen immigrants, our parents and our families have just wanted the best for us. They want us to be able to succeed. And that means that the arts and creative jobs are really scary. And I think that being able to have a brand that shows that there is space for us, and allowing people to imagine what it's like to come into it as a part of it, is really important to me. So with the brand, we do like different workshops with different like London schools and with kids from all different backgrounds. And we try and endeavour to do, you know, different talks and things like that. Because I think that positivity in fashion is not only about product and materials, but it's really about people. It's also reflected in the way that I hire. My team is incredibly inclusive. Yeah, everyone, apart from one person, is POC. We're mainly women. So all that kind of stuff, or women identifying. So, you know, I'm trying to make sure we can be inclusive from the behind the scenes, and then also not just the campaigns and the shows and stuff like that, because I think anyone can do that. But it's all about like what's happening behind the scenes. And then I think for me, something that's really important is exploring this intersection between creativity and sustainability. I think before, maybe 5 years ago, brands that were sustainable, that were also fashion thinking and fashion forward, weren't so prevalent. Like it was, sustainability was always like, you could get a hemp t-shirt and there wasn't any style behind it. But you know, like the thing is, the most sustainable items are things that people want and people want to keep and cherish and look after for a long time, right? So that desirability is really important. And so I feel like the brand explores, you know, how can we make something desirable that someone wants to cherish and keep it for a lifetime, but make it with the right materials and then be inclusive in that process and representative. I think there's so many elements to it. And I often find that the conversation just gets very pigeonholed into fabrication, carbon footprints, and things like that, which is, of course, it's really important. And we endeavour to work really hard to improve that all the time. But I definitely think that sustainability is not one-dimensional. But I also think that that's a reflection of conversations being, of sustainability being led by whiteness. And if we're leading sustainability conversations by whiteness, we're not thinking about the global south and all of those people in the chain that matter, in that supply chain that matter, not just like what happens when it gets to the UK or to Europe or whatever. So I feel like I'm trying to think about it in a multidimensional way. You know, is it about sustainability or positive fashion is also about representing ideas fairly and giving people props where props are due. So if, you know, I think I remember in the, when I was growing up and watching shows in the 2000s and 90, like 2000s and watching 90 shows back, you'd watch European houses do beautiful collections, but it would be like, you know, quote unquote, the Africa collection. And I knew that they didn't have one African person on that collection working on it. And also they weren't being vocal about where that inspiration came from and what communities and what artistry that they were taking inspiration from. I just think that we can make fashion much more transparent and include people from the whole process.
100%.
I guess, do you think things as far as sustainability are getting better in the fashion industry? Because as you said, if you're looking at the whole chain, a lot of that is black and brown people.
You know what? It's so funny because this answer changes depending on what day I'm asked. It depends on if I'm feeling positive about it or not. But one thing I will say, something that really like I find a bit frustrating is that the fashion industry as a term is an umbrella for so many different types of businesses. So it includes like contemporary luxury, like my brand, it includes high-end luxury. It also includes fast fashion. And no matter what I'm doing in my brand and what other big businesses might be doing, but they're higher up brands that, you know, have the ability to actually reflect pricing back to the customer. No matter what we do, there are fast fashion brands growing and growing and growing that are producing 1,000 dresses of the 1,000 of the same dress per week and selling it for £5 or £10. And they are, you know, people, and it's really difficult. So there's two things I want to say about it. Firstly, I think it is getting better in some areas and it's also not in other areas because consumerism is just growing and growing. So these businesses that are making so much money, what's their incentive to do any better? They don't have any. There's no like laws about it. There's no taxes for it. So they don't have an incentive to improve. And they can also tap into the sustainability conversation by greenwashing or even the diversity conversation. You know, I don't want to start blasting certain brands.
We know the ones.
But there's been examples recently where one fast fashion brand did a poll whether to have a black or a white, because that's about influencer, be in the campaign. And the votes went to the black influencer and they put the white one on the campaign anyway. And then they had to sort of backpedal and put that influencer on a campaign because there was outrage, I guess. Or, you know, there's been another brand recently. Is it the same brand? I can't even remember. No, it's a similar one that's now got a very famous sustainability face. I mean, I don't know if we can say who it is. It's Boohoo and Kourtney Kardashian. And I just think even when we look at that, is that influencer's life really that sustainable? I mean, I'm not a multimillionaire. I'm not hating. If I was rich as her, I'd probably be doing some things as well. But, you know, they travel on private jet. They're not exactly the most sustainable person themselves. So, but it's easy to put that label on. So while that's happening, how can we be making much progress? But then in other spaces, I think there is so much progress. But the other thing I want to say is that, you know, sustainability has been so for so long a white and privileged conversation to have. I think it's, we get into, I don't want to ever finger point at the consumer. And I think that sometimes that's what happens. So if, you know, someone's a nurse and they've got three kids and those kids need to be wearing clothes, like, I don't think that we should ever demonize that person or even have a conversation with them about where they're deciding to buy that from, because they've left with no alternative. And it's the big businesses that have got the choices. They don't have to make them clothes with 100% new polyester. They don't. They can make enough profit and choose organic materials or recycled fibers. And also then that they can influence the economies of scale for the rest of the industry and allow prices to come down. So I think we really need to make sure that, like, pressure is put upon big business, which I don't think we do enough. And, you know, I think it improves sometimes, it doesn't other times. I don't know. It's a big question. There's a lot to think about.
It's a minefield.
It is. Yeah. And it's like big business needs that incentive from government and from these people who are busy telling individuals to kind of hold that individual responsibility of recycle your cans. But at the same time, you're not, like, I just read something today where they're saying there's a motion to potentially ban solar energy on farms right now while we're in an energy crisis. And it's just like the government is like doing one thing while we all want the opposite. So it's a wider conversation.
Conservatism and the conservatives literally by definition is all about the individual, isn't it? They believe in individual responsibility. And of course, Individual responsibility does need to come into play in society in some places. But at the same time, it's really depressing, like, what they're doing to everyone and the country and making it everyone else's fault. It's just, when it's just not. I don't know. I think it's so scary. I don't know what to do. All I can do in my bubble is, you know, use my voice where I can. I'm not an activist. I am a creative, but like where I can, I definitely like to start conversations about how we can do better. You know, if I'm in rooms with important people trying to change that conversation, but it's really everyone needs to just vote in the next election and try and get these people out of here.
We're just going to take a quick break and we'll be back after this for the extract.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I think it's time that we move to our next section, the extract. And I was wondering if you could give us a little bit of context behind these two pieces and why you chose them, and then we'll get you to read them out for us.
Yeah, oh yeah, I need to find where I've written them. Okay, so I didn't really know what to send. It's obviously like quite a fun, I don't know, it's just like I didn't know really what to send for the extract. And I was just thinking about like what I thought would be important to talk about. And so one of them is from notes, I think a while ago, and I wrote them, I think it was after a therapy session, and it was about body image. And, you know, since I've started this brand and my career has taken this turn, I have to do certain things that are like public facing, like have press photos and this kind of stuff. And I've just had such hard, I've had such a hard relationship with the way I look for the whole of my life. And it was kind of myself talking to myself about how to try and step back out of that and to stop like criticizing myself so much, because loads of that thought and process around it is not my fault. Like it's not even about really the way that I look. It's more about like what society has kind of made me feel like I should look like. And I just feel like since I wrote that note, I'm in a slightly more healthy place with that. So I thought that would be a nice thing to talk about. And the other thing, I think being British, like we're really bad at like giving ourselves props where props are due. We don't celebrate our wins. And I wrote in my notes that it was the proudest day of my life after I'd finished filming my first film with another director called Simona Alani-Pekin. And I just remember feeling like, oh my God, this is just, my dreams are really coming true. So I thought that was also important to talk about. Yeah, so for just a little bit of context, I have found that in the past I would be looking at pictures of myself and like zooming in and literally thinking like, oh my God, you are just hideous. Like I would look at one thing and then sort of obsess over it. And, you know, I've got to be like a walking advert for the brand, right? And it would be like going to different events and stuff. And I would, sometimes it would be like, I'll be in tears before these events, which are also like amazing events to even be included in going. And really, like, I was not thinking about the positive of even being able to be in these rooms and sitting at these tables. This like self-image thing would just take over so much. It would ruin so many experiences that I had. And also because of like successes in my career, I also felt like guilty to even talk about it, because I felt like people would be like, what are you talking about? Like you get to do all this amazing stuff. You get to travel, you get to go to these events, and then you're moaning about like what you look like. And I found it really weird. I had almost guilt around it. I was quite sort of, yeah, I don't know. So I did start to talk about it in therapy, and I wish that everyone had access to therapy is another thing I wish was equal for everyone, because it can be really good. So this is from the 3rd of March in 2021. And these notes are in note form, so I'll expand if they don't make sense. But I said, thought is just a thought. Don't give importance to a stuff that I don't need to. Just accept experiences for what they are. Be less judgmental and more factual about images of myself. The way I look at other people's photos, I should do that to myself. You know, I don't analyze them down to the pixel. Stop and take a moment before I look at a picture of myself. Limit the time I spend looking at a picture of myself. Put the picture in context. It makes up a tiny part of the brand experience. You know, for example, if there's a picture of me at the Fashion Awards, I'm at the Fashion Awards. I need to like think about that before I think about the picture. Other people don't analyze me the way that I analyze myself, and keep things at a physical distance. So not being like face to the screen. I know they might not make sense, but
no, it all makes perfect sense, I think. Yeah, to start with, I'm interested in like, where do you remember where you were kind of mentally and emotionally at the time of specifically writing this piece and all these notes for yourself? Was there a specific thing that kind of triggered that for you?
I mean, I wasn't doing very well. I think I, having my own business and stuff is so busy, and I really, really had to work so hard on looking after myself, like physically and mentally. This was at a time when I didn't have an assistant. So I was like juggling so many things, going to all these events. And then I was also like having had a really long commute. And so I remember just feeling like I wasn't my best self. And for me, exercise and eating well is really important, not just the way I look, but just how I feel and how I sleep. And I just remember that there was like quite a lot of events happening, and I was like, which are amazing, and it had just been a fashion week and I was going to all these different places, but I felt, and I wasn't quite fitting into the clothes that I had, like my Alawalia wardrobe, and I just remember feeling like really miserable. And I don't, and I remember feeling miserable, and I remember feeling like it was boring. Like, I was going to a dinner. So this therapy session was a day after a dinner, and I was going to a dinner, and it was a really amazing event and meet loads of amazing people. And I just remember, like, I was like 45 minutes late because I was just agonizing about what I was going to wear. And then when you get to the event, you know, they want to take a photo of you at the event. And I remember just wanting to like cry. And in this period, I'd also had my photo taken on set, and I like went to the toilet and I actually cried. I just felt so miserable. But I just remember also thinking like, that is so boring. Like, I don't want to feel like that anymore. And I'm kind of like sick of it. So it was just like, I spoke to my therapist. I'm so fortunate and lucky to be able to access therapy. And I just remember I needed to put myself first in terms of being kind to myself. And best piece of advice my therapist always says to me is, be a friend to yourself. You know, you wouldn't talk to your friends the way that you talk to yourself. And I think that's really stuck with me. And then since then, I mean, listen, I'm not going to lie to you. I still am the same in some ways. I still do sort of, I'm very self-critical, I think. But that also comes with when you come from a high achieving background, or you like to achieve things a lot. I think that does happen. But I've definitely put things in place now to not feel so much like that. You know, I've got an event tonight and I don't have the same dread or the same misery. I'm actually just more excited about going to it and like chatting with people and stuff. So yeah, I've tried to keep reminding myself that thoughts are only thoughts. It doesn't mean it's a fact. And yeah, it's hard. I mean, you've got to keep checking in with yourself, right? Also, that just understanding that, like, what am I even judging myself against? Like, we're human beings with so many different people and we all look completely different. And it's just almost like trying to what's the word? It's like we've all been indoctrinated, right, into what society believes we should look like and how we should be. And it's trying to undo that. Yeah, I definitely feel better.
I feel like there's even like a trip of like, even when you actively try to kind of deconstruct certain standards, or you're like actively invested in deconstructing them, something that I think a lot of us, especially women of color, especially Black women, have to often do. There's, like you say in here, there's that other hypocrisy, which is like, I can look at everyone else and think they're the most beautiful people in the world, and then still come to myself with the standards that I've been trying to unlearn for the last like 5-10 years. Like, why can I celebrate everyone else's diversity and everyone else's beauty and not my own?
Exactly.
Which is just another level to it. I completely relate to everything you're saying right now.
It's hard. It really is hard. And I definitely think, you know, for women, it's not, of course, men and all genders have definitely different body issues. I just think for, you know, women and people that identify as women, or that whole group of people, like, society has bullied us basically for years. You know, we would when we were kids, we'd go into a shop and see on the front cover a celebrity cellulite circles. Like, that is absolutely insane. And how can we all be normal when that's what we've had to grow up with? And I think there's so much unpacking to do. And then also, obviously, there's whiteness on a pedestal. You know, I'm half Indian, and when you go to India, the billboards, all the women look white, and there's colorism is a real issue there. And you know, colorism's, I'm also Nigerian, there's also elements of colorism in Nigerian society. I wouldn't say it's the same with the same vitriol. But there is all these different things that we're trying to unpack. And for me, the thing that was really the turning point was that it was stopping me enjoying my life. Like, I wasn't enjoying stuff. And I was also being a bit like, you know, like, it's also quite miserable to be around people like that. You know, like, if someone said, oh, you look really nice, and I said, oh, I look disgusting. Like, what? How awkward have I then made that conversation for the other person? It's just ridiculous. So I was just thinking, like, I really needed to kind of, and I'm not perfect. I'm sure if some of my friends listening to this, they're going to be like, you're still a bit negative about yourself. And it's definitely a work in progress. But I'm about to turn 30 and I want to go into my 30s. Like, something I really love is that people always tell me when they get into their 30s and their 40s, life gets more easy because they're more confident. And I really want that for myself as well. I think, sometimes as well, I think it was a different note, but I wrote, like, your body is just a vessel and it's not who you are. So I'm definitely trying to... This is a good conversation. Yeah. I'm also reminding myself that I'm trying to do this.
I liked what you said earlier about, like, kind of facts versus feelings, because our feelings are not facts. I could wake up one day and be like, I am so ugly. Mm-hmm. And then the next day be like, I look hot. But I don't look any different. I do not look any different day to day. So how am I having two different experiences?
I also think that that's a really good thing to think about. Like, thoughts are not facts. I think that's so good to think about in so many different areas. You know, like, whether it's body image or having anxieties about, I don't know, whether it's friendships, relationships, work relationships, all that kind of stuff. Like, that is something that we should all sort of try and endeavour to think about, because sometimes we just make ourselves so stressed and it's not really based in reality.
I think something else that you touched on there, which I think I've been talking about recently as well, is, I guess, like, society's indoctrination of us to all, especially, like, femme identifying and women, to want to or feel like we need to look good, or like our purpose is to look good. And then in the same breath, there's a shame in terms of, like, being vain or that vanity. And it's like you feel, it's the highest priority, but it's also seen as, like, this really frivolous thing to do and to worry about.
You're completely right. And I think, like, I really like TikTok. It's like my vice. Oh my God, it's so bad, actually. Some days, like,
second therapist.
It's so bad.
Oh my God.
And I mean, it's great. What I love about TikTok is that you do, as with body image as well, I think that TikTok is somewhere that you see so many different bodies, abled or what, with different disabilities or different sizes or shapes, whatever it is. I think that is really, after, like, having Instagram be our, like, leading social media platform, TikTok is great for seeing different people, like, different ages. I really do love that. And I learn so much about different communities on the app. But I do find, especially, I think, when we talk about Black women and the natural hair movement, right? It's like, I do find that we have, sometimes on TikTok or even in culture, I'm talking and it's like, you know, we need to just, like, embrace our natural hair. And it's something I do believe in if it works for people. But then almost if you don't embrace your natural hair, you're also being demonized. And it's like, but sometimes I just want to dress up. You know, like, why shouldn't someone just wear a wig if they fancy wearing a wig? It's also about freedom of expression. And I think that patriarchy has instilled women battling against women from the beginning of time. And it's something that we haven't got quite out of yet. You know, like, for the fact that, like, I went on holiday in the summer and I was, you know, I wanted to have looks for this holiday. I was in Ibiza, so I was planned, like, looks. And someone I'd met on the holiday, like, they called me high maintenance. And I'm like, but why, what, do you want me to just look like trash then? Or what, you know, what's the issue?
And it's ever moving,
like,
goalpost.
Yeah. And then it's like, if I didn't make the effort, you know, someone might say, oh, you're on holiday, you could have made an effort. It's so bizarre the way that we judge each other constantly. I think it's something that everyone needs to check themselves about a little bit, I think, because it happens without people realising.
Yeah. I think I saw just recently there was a conversation around, I guess, or there's a lot of conversations around, like, the kind of high standards to which, especially Black women, I think in London, the aesthetic standards that we hold ourselves to, which sometimes level with, like, celebrities and influencers, it's like, there's so much pressure to spend all of this money and to look good. And then at the same time, you get the conversations which are like, you shouldn't, you're vain if you do this, or you're superficial if you do that. And it is, you're right, it's such an ever-moving goalpost that's just like, when we change the standards, but we're still kind of enforcing them as rules rather than allowing for people to be free and to almost, like you say, like you said before, just not care because it's just a body. It's not that serious.
And I also think that people should be able to just do whatever is right for them. You know, like any conversation like this, like sometimes, like, you know, TikTok, like even thinking about TikTok and reading the comments, and like, sometimes I want to say to people, just mind your own business. Like, if someone wants to dress like this or wear that or eat this or eat that, it's just so up to someone to be able to be who they are. And I think that that's the other thing as well. Especially, I totally agree with you about the standards that Black women in London and the US hold themselves to. Like, hair, nails, this, that. There's so much. And a part of it, listen, if that works for someone, it makes them feel better and they're enjoying it, enjoy it. But I think that Blackness and womanhood is so multidimensional. We shouldn't be holding everyone to the same standard at all. So yeah, I think we've got a lot of work to do on that front, unfortunately.
And these beauty industries, they feed off our insecurities. There's a reason, you know, Black women spend so much more than other groups of women on our hair and all sorts. They feed off it.
Absolutely. I mean, it's even like now, I mentioned I'm turning 30 and I'm like, do I need to start getting anti-aging products? And does anti-aging products even work?
Botox era now? Like, I'm like, what happens like, now?
Yeah. It's literally, so it's really like, it's like, it doesn't stop, does it? I think from, you know, I think if I ever have a child, for example, that will be another period of time where I'm going to be judged or judging myself. And I just think for women, it just doesn't let up. And I think we just, having conversations like this when we know that people feel the same, like they feel the same pressure, is really important.
I think, and like you said before, I laughed because I'm the same where, you know, like I speak one way and I practice something else sometimes, and you can have all of these lapses. But I think, like you say, having conversations and just being aware of like the systems in place to kind of set you up to fail is half of the journey. But I think it would also be great if you could read your second note for us and we dig into that for a little second.
So the second one I sent was on the 24th of October, 2020. And it said, I've never felt so proud of something in my whole life. And then I just wrote the date out.
Amazing. Can you talk to us a little about the actual film and like what that kind of entailed for you?
Yeah, so it was such a just, oh my God, I still get goosebumps thinking about it now. It's a completely life-changing moment for me. It was pandemic time, and I think it was about August. I got an email and the subject said a message from Gucci. And I was like, what is this? And I thought it was like an advert or something, you know, and it wasn't. They asked me to let them know when I was available for a call. And I had to pretend I was like, I didn't answer for an hour trying to like play it cool a little bit. And I spoke to them that afternoon, and basically Alessandro and the Gucci team had decided to do Gucci Fest, which was a film festival in light of the pandemic because we couldn't do shows and travel and all that kind of stuff. So they gave 12 young designers budgets to make a film. So I have always loved film, but I've never done a film or never worked at that point. I'd never been filmed for things and stuff like that, but I'd never sort of used film as a medium at that point. And so I was like, okay, I didn't know how many more chances I was going to have to make a film, right? So I'm like, I need to make the best, most important thing I can think of with this opportunity. So I partnered with Simona Alani-Pekun, who's an amazing British-Nigerian director. He's just, yeah, I love him dearly. And I went to him and I said to him, like, I knew what I kind of wanted to make a film about. I wanted it to be about, I'd been recently thinking about how my life, I was getting opportunities like doing a film with Gucci because people in Britain in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s protested for our rights, for the rights of Black people and brown people to be able to show up authentically in society and also just have the bare minimum and equal, you know, access to healthcare, etc. So I was thinking about that, and I was thinking about I wonder what those people are doing now. And that was kind of where the research started. And from there, I was thinking about Mangrove, and I we connected with Mashup, who's a Trini guy in Notting Hill, who was very closely linked to the Mangrove Nine, who is one of the biggest court cases that pushed forward black rights in the UK, as well as Rupert Boyce's family. We spoke with them, who was one of the Mangrove Nine. And from that, I started to build up this idea that I wanted it to be a kaleidoscope of the black British experience. And so we filmed only over 2 days. Now I've done a few more films. I don't know how we did it. We did 2 days, I think 11 locations, and we filmed athletes, you know, hijabi boxers, calisthenics guys, a poet, just all these different people to do with Mangrove. And it was about celebrating the Black British experience. And we interviewed them and had experts of what they were talking about. And I think that day was the second film day and we'd just wrapped. And I was like, I just knew it was going to be really special. I just knew I'd changed the course of what my life was going to be like, you know, in terms of, I feel like I could cry talking about it now. I felt so proud that through my job, I could make a piece of work that celebrated us and the community so, like, much. Oh, God, I really could cry. I felt so proud that I was able to take everything I've learned and the way that we've been sidelined and say in my own work, like, I'm not doing that and I want to do something that's so special and have people of all different ages, sizes, backgrounds in it. I felt that was so important and I couldn't believe that I was going to be able to present it as a part of Gucci Fest, you know, the biggest luxury brand in the world, and so be able to open up to such an audience. And then also it was also a project, I don't know what you call it, a project where I really fell in love with film, and since then I've kind of committed myself to doing more film and learning about it. Yeah, it was just super special. I just got goosebumps thinking about it now. I don't know. It's just, it was really, really important to me.
I feel like often there's like a moment as like black creatives or whatever in the UK where I think a lot of us are realizing and like seeing the validity in our personal experience at the heart of what we do and like seeing success on like massive scales like that, not because you've conformed to or are able to kind of translate like the white experience or Britishness in like their terms, but because it's like your own definition of it. And it probably feels like being seen and like being heard and like, you know, like it's some kind of affirmation in a sense.
Yeah, right? Definitely. It's really affirming. And to be able to do it, you know, my whole, like the crew was mainly black and South Asian. Like it was like a whole group of people that understood what we were trying to achieve. And it was affirming, you know, it was like down to our catering. We had like black catering on set and all this kind of stuff. It was just like really affirming and definitely nice to make something that was not through the gaze of whiteness, and to be able to have, you know, some of the people in the film, especially, you know, like Natanya and Jackie Boyce, who I'm now really good friends with, but at the time, like, they had been approached to do so many different things because of Mangrove, but they didn't necessarily feel comfortable or safe or whatever it was to speak, or they didn't feel relaxed enough to do it. And I think that when we approached them, they knew it was coming from a place of genuine love and wanting to put our culture on a pedestal. It was also a film, we called it Joy because it was about joy. I think we've all tired so much of watching black pain for entertainment, quote unquote entertainment. I don't want to watch another film about slavery. You know, it's like we've watched so much of it and there is so much more to our experience than that. So it was really about taking different experiences, but also showing like how those experiences have led to what the joy in their life now. And it was also trying to be a positive celebration of blackness, not just talking about only about our struggles.
Yeah, that feels like a very pivotal moment in your life. And yeah, just I can just see the joy on your face and how much, yeah, that meant to you. So thank you so much for sharing it. And that actually perfectly segues onto our next section, which is all about joy.
Great.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of echoing exactly what you just said, which is, you know, like we do, and rightly so, pay so much attention and time to, I guess, like the more painful parts of Black history and the Black experience, but joy is so crucial to that as well. And we wanted to ask if you had any moments from your past? I know your extract isn't actually that old, but are there any kind of distinct childhood memories that stick out to you as ones of pure joy that you've just have remembered to this day?
Oh yeah, that's a good one. I think like lots of family barbecues, but always a really joyful experience. Like, you know, I love to eat. So any experience I ever had with a family barbecue, great food, great music was always really pivotal to me. Something that's also like come to mind as well, I'm not religious or anything, but I used to go to church with my friend Kez's family in their Caribbean. And I remember it was like a black church and I used to just love the singing. Like I used to find it so, like I just found it, I remember just loving singing. I don't know if I was singing very well, but like singing along to gospel songs. And then also, as I love food, having them big feasts afterwards, I always really enjoyed it. I think there's also joy when I have been in my home country, so in India or Nigeria, I think feeling like there's all this sense of being at home has always been really joyful for me. I wish I could go back a bit more. Yeah, so many different things. I mean, there's so many nice things. I mean, meeting all my friends, and my friends are like very, like they're from different backgrounds. You know, my best friends are Nigerian, Jamaican, like just all different places. And I think experiencing, when I was growing up, experiencing their families and their cultures with them, you know, whether I go around for dinner or going to like their family celebrations and weddings and things like that. I think for me, lots of times that are linked to joy are times around communion and coming together and good music and good food. If there's good food, I'll be very joyful, to be honest. So.
What advice would you give to that slightly younger version of yourself who is kind of, you know, dealing with your image and being photographed and trying to kind of be in that moment and be kinder to yourself? What advice would you have for that version of you?
Yeah, I would definitely say, you know, like a couple of things, like treat yourself like you would treat your friends, because you wouldn't be talking to your friends with this horrible, like negative tone or whatever, you know, in your mind that happens. So treat yourself how you treat your friends. Also, like think about the fact that this photo of you's even been taken. Like, what an amazing opportunity. And dealing with it in a space of self-consciousness or thinking about yourself in a negative way comes out in the experience, and it affects the experience, not only the way that you feel on that day, but the way that you can see in your eyes, in the photo, all that kind of stuff. And I think, like, just trying to enjoy it a bit more. I'm something I'm still working on.
I love that. And what do you think that younger self would think of where you are today?
You know what? I think I'd be really proud. I think I would. I knew I didn't want to necessarily do quote unquote normal job, and I knew I wanted to do fashion, but I think I would be blown away. I didn't know that it was going to be like this, and I feel I've outdone what my dreams were. So I would be really proud, and I'd hopefully give myself a bit of a break if I found out.
Love that so much. Thank you so much, Priya.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
That definitely hit home.
Yeah, I really enjoyed how honest she was. Like, yeah. I think a lot of us feel this way about ourselves and how we look, but we don't really talk about it or express it in a way that feels like really truthful, because it does, it's kind of hard, it's painful.
Yeah, and I think it's painful, and then there's also that element of like shame around, like,
yeah, the shame.
And, yeah, the shame, and what Priya mentioned, which is that kind of like you don't want to be the what's it called?
Like Debbie Downer.
Yeah, Debbie Downer as well. So, but yeah, there's a lot of pressure to kind of stifle it or just keep it to yourself or not like kind of dump that on someone else.
And also like just hearing her talk about how proud she was of the film she worked on compared to like how she feels about how she looks. I'm like, you exist in the same body, and trying to, you know, remember to be kind to yourself, and we're just souls in this big flesh sack.
That's such a good point that you can almost, and I think it links back to something she said as well, which is that thing of the dissonance between, you know, having access to these really happy things, you know, achieving all of this amazing stuff, being really proud of the work that you're doing. And yet something as simple as like how you look can end up tainting those experiences and tainting your like ability to be present and like value yourself, because you think, you know, like, even if I've made this amazing film or I'm at these amazing events and I have this amazing career, I don't feel comfortable in my own skin. Yeah, it's a hard relate.
It's really hard. But you know what? I think it's good that like we're talking about it and kind of expressing those feelings.
Yeah, I don't know. I think literally the event that we were talking about the other day that I went to, I'm just in general bad at taking pictures of myself. And then like the next day I'm suddenly like, oh man, I wish I had pictures of myself, or I see the pictures that I have and I'm like so hypercritical of all of them that I don't share or like really experience like, it just taints my whole experience of something, because all my memories of things, because I can't enjoy these like little snapshots of them.
Which is wild, because you could have been having like the best time ever and then you literally see a photo of yourself and now you're like, actually, I hated
like
the night.
The whole night.
It was horrible.
They let me walk around looking like
I didn't enjoy myself.
literally. And I had to have that moment with myself of like talking myself down and being like, okay, firstly, maybe I don't need to share any pictures of myself. Maybe it was a valid memory in and of itself and the photo evidence doesn't make it valid. But secondly, like, maybe you should just be okay with posting a picture in which you don't love the way your face looks because you had a great time and it doesn't matter. Like, there's so many layers to it.
Do you know what? Someone told me always, like, someone can always see you at every angle. And I always think about that and I'm like, it's so true. Doesn't matter if I'm doing up poses. I can be seen from every angle in real life all the time. And that's okay. I'm going to have to live with
that. Yeah, that's so true. That is so true. I think we're all on that journey to kind of like unlearn the value that we as individuals and society in general places on us based on our aesthetic value or our aesthetic, you know, like score. And we've talked about it on the podcast before, but it's just, yeah, it's a long old bloody journey.
Yep.
This has been an II Studios production. Thank you so much for listening. We really hope you enjoyed this episode. Don't forget, you can sign up to become a member at gal-dem.com for access to exclusive discounts with our favourite brands and partners, early access to tickets for Galdem events, an advanced copy of our annual print issue, and so much more. Make sure you're following us on all major social media at galdemzine or visit our website at gal-dem.com.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.